Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Hi, folks. How are you? Apologies if you can hear my kids in the background. They're on devices. It's a hard life trying to drag them off screens. But we've just had dinner. I needed to come and talk to you guys. So I told them they could have an hour. So much hilarity ensues downstairs. So I apologise if you can hear them screaming or being overzealous on roadblocks in the background. But thank you for joining me for the second episode that we've released this week. As I said last week on the show or on a previous episode, we have been inundated with wonderful guests. So we thought rather than miss out on getting the opportunity to not just talk to people, but also enthuse about their work, we decided that we would release two episodes a week for the next couple of weeks. So already released this week on Monday, we had Denis Villeneuve talking about Dune, working with Hans Zimmer. And since then, of course, part two has been announced. Whoop, whoop. So excited about that. Oh, and there goes my phone. Must remember to turn it off. Such good news. Such good news that it's been given the green light. I don't know if you've been to the cinema to see it yet. If you haven't, you should. I sort of audibly screeched at the screen as it came to an end because I didn't want it to end and I wanted more. So I'm very excited that there is going to be the next installment of Dune coming in 2023. Brilliant. Bravo, everybody involved. Amazing. But if you haven't listened to Denis from earlier this week talking Dune, then please do so. In fact, the last couple of weeks have been pretty special, to be honest. Todd Haynes talking about his Velvet Underground doc. Michael Palin from our live at Widescreen. We had Daniel Hart and David Lowry talking The Green Knight. And Stuart and Barry from Mogwai, who we should say a massive congratulations to, for picking up Scottish Album of the Year. Yes, I love it. Such great news. Anyway, coming up over the next couple of weeks, we have the likes of Hans Zimmer, Reggie Yates, Pablo Larraín talking about Spencer. I'm really, fingers crossed, going to get a hold of St. Vincent about this film, The Nowhere In. Chloe Zhao talking about Eternals. Jason Reitman talking about Ghostbusters. We've got so many great guests on the way. I'm so excited. And this week's, in fact, this episode is no exception because our latest guest on soundtracking is a composer. And I honestly can say that we've been trying to pin him down since day one of this podcast back in August 2016. Alexandre Desplat is a true giant of the film scoring business, having been nominated for numerous Oscars and winning one for his work on Wes Anderson's Grand Budapest Hotel and for The Shape of Water. And if you were in any doubt as to his credentials, he's worked with the likes of, in no particular order, George Clooney, Stephen Frears, Greta Gerwig, Kathryn Bigelow, David Fincher, Terrence Malick, Nora Ephron, Roman Polanski and Ben Affleck. But it's to discuss his latest collaboration with Wes that Alexandra joins us today, the typically idiosyncratic, fabulous The French Dispatch. As always, his music beautifully complements the quirky visuals, humour and narrative presented to us by everyone's favourite offbeat director, as illustrated by this cue. Animated car chase.
finally! Yes, we made it happen.
We needed some other people to make it happen, but finally, Alexander, how are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you. And you?
Very good, thank you. Very good indeed, yeah. Lovely to see you and lovely to be in a cinema and hear your music, which is even better. Oh, I had such fun watching the French Dispatch last week.
It's really crazy, huh?
Oh, it's bonkers, but brilliant is how I would describe it.
Yes, it is. Yeah, he's mad.
He is, but nobody makes films like him. That's what's
great.
It's
He has no fear. That's why I think, you know, he just goes with his imagination and let it grow and let it create a special object that nobody could imagine aside from him.
You know that thing where people encourage you to be more childlike and to try and step outside of all the things that life throws at you and just allow yourself to be? That's what I feel when I step into the cinema for one of his films, is I kind of leave everything at the door and just it encourages you to do that even once you've left the cinema, which I think is a really great thing.
Yeah, there's something about his film. It's like what you just said makes me think of, and I never thought about that, but his movies are like pop-up books. Some pop-up books that you would buy for your kids, and you don't have no idea what's inside, and then you open it slowly, and what? Things come out, and it's so unpredictable, you know?
I think if you had a camera on people's faces as they were watching his films, every particular, well, with the French Dispatch, with the kind of episodic, you know, the chapters of it, and every time something, you kind of, you're the awe in your face just of the visuals of trying to scan the screen to see all these beautiful colors and images and actors, and then on top of that your music. It's just it's been a fabulous sensual overload.
Great, thank you.
Tell me how it works with Wes, because you've worked with him. If you don't mind, I'd love to find out how you started working together, because I know that I have you for a little while, Alexandra, and the idea that we are going to be able to even skim the surface of your work is impossible. So I thought it might be quite nice just to talk about working with Wes, and it gives me the opportunity as well to talk about my love of so many of his scores that you've worked on. For my kids now, particularly Fantastic Mr. Fox, which I think we've watched 12 times in lockdown. But and then a couple of others. But let's talk about the French Dispatch. How does a Wes Anderson project present itself to you? At what point does he send you a script, or how does it work?
Well, if we go back to the history, I was lucky to meet him through Stephen Gagan, who had directed Syriana, mm-hmm. which I scored. And I met Wes, and he just, you know, genuinely said, "Oh, I'm editing a movie in Paris. Would you like to see it and write the score?" So I went and met with him, and that's where we started Mr. Fox. And Mr. Fox was such a beautiful rendering, and everything, the voices, the camera, the way the little puppets were so cute, and it was so beautiful. And we started working, and it was very different, because he would come to my studio in Paris or in New York when we were working in New York, and we would work very quickly. Very quickly, it was, we were connecting. There was something just natural, obvious, smooth, and it's still the same, you know, when we start the new film. The first question is, oh, here's the script. How about this concept of music? And then we dig into the concept, put the instrumentation together. Mm-hmm. I start writing, I send in music to the picture I have. He comes over, we chop things, I start again. Oh, I love this section. Okay, I develop a section, and the next day again and again, and then he goes very fast, very, very fast. And then when I have all these demos, he goes back to the editing and tries to mold both, you know, merge them together. And it becomes so compact that you think that it was filmed and composed at the same time, because he readjusts the picture to the music and vice versa. And so it's a very, very special and different way of working, which has been very beautiful through the years.
What was the conversation then with regards to the French Dispatch, with regards to instrumentation and also the idea of these kind of chapters to this story in a way, and the different characters?
Well, first I mentioned the Dadaist, you know, the Dada color of the story. To me, it's so and predictable, rebel, provocative, fun, fearless that I thought about the early 1920s in Switzerland and France, where the Dadaist movement started. And if I go back to that this era, and I listened to the most Dadaist composer, who was Erik Satie. It goes from piano to some kind of dancing band, brass band mixed with piano and tinkling things. So we went for that concept as for the sound. And then for the section, for example, when all the section with Benicio del Toro, it's just this huge, vast room where he's painting. And we thought that the piano would be so pure to create the solitude of this man with his canvas and let the room ring from this piano. To have this great, great pianist, Jean-Yves Thibaudet, who's a marvelous French also pianist, who I've worked before in Los Angeles, in New York. And for the other sections, we tried to combine harpsichord, bassoons, tuba, things that were not meant to be playing together, but it just works because it mirrors this crazy things happening on screen.
Performances. I mean, I almost feel like Wes gives actors the opportunity to play the characters that they've always wanted to play, but they would never tell anyone, if that makes sense. I just think that you watch this film and you just go, they are having so much fun making this film. I love Frances McDormand and Timothée Chalamet together. I think those are just some of my favorite scenes as well. But Benicio as well. It's like there's so much. It's such a rich film. And I love the whole, in the arts and artists section of the film, there's this lovely it almost feels like the cue is, when it starts, is like it could almost be a piece of music from a silent movie. And I really kind of love that. That's how I felt almost. And I felt quite transported by that. And I kind of like that notion.
Yeah, because also there's this black and white moment at the beginning, which switches to color with Tilda Swinton character, who's so funny also with her
so funny
false teeth. as the art creator, she's I mean this bunch of actors that Wes manages to unite behind him, and technicians and you know, composer, we're very lucky to have this companionship, because yes, we're having fun, we work hard, but it's you know, for a good reason, because we're having fun. And then when we meet at the premieres, we also have fun, which is also a good moment to share.
Yeah. How important is it for you to be privy to those performances? Because like you say, it feels like when you see it all cut together that you don't know where the circle starts in terms of the marriage of the visuals and the music and stuff. You don't know where the starting point is because they are so beautifully entwined. But for you, how important is it to be, and are you always privy to the performances?
Oh, they are crucial, because you know they give the pace, they give the energy also, not just the I don't just follow the camera moves or the editing. I also look at the actors. Actually, it's my main concern when I write for a film in general, is the characters and how the actors deliver the lines and how they move in the screen. Because I worked a lot in theater when I was in my early years of a composer, I've learned to love and watch and listen to the actors a lot, which I can see when I've had the opportunity to see the work of young composers working, you know, in a class on the same piece of film. Mm. They look at the picture, they don't look at the actors. It's very strange. They look at what's happening on screen. No, that's the production design. It's great. We need to listen to the production design, but to watch the actors.
That's so interesting. I love that, because I find as well that the way that this marriage works is that, I don't know, there's this weird thing sometimes with music where it's such a sensual experience, but sometimes it even ignites your smell in a way. Like it helps you kind of, and I find that particularly like with this film, and particularly around, you know, the kind of the chef police cooking and the private dining room, those cues and stuff as well, that there's a, you feel that steam and you can smell kind of what's around the table sort of thing as well. I wonder if that's a conversation that you have with Wes, or you think about when it's the, I guess it's got to do with the instrumentation and the rhythm.
Yeah, you just said it right. Yes, it's the rhythm, the tempo, the instrumentation, the way music starts and stops, which is also very peculiar on Wes's movies. The only other director I can think of is Roman Polanski, where the start and stops of music are very, very peculiar and really, really special. If you look back at Chinatown, it's amazing how the music stops and starts, how silence is important, as important as the music, and how starting can propel a scene, or stopping the music can propel a scene. And that's a very subtle magic tour, you know?
Yeah, good magic. Really good magic. Good kind of magic that we like. What was your reaction when you first read the script? Because, you know, as I said at the start, this film is bonkers, but it's brilliant. And it takes, you kind of go, right, I'm on the Wes Anderson flying carpet, and I am going, I'm on this journey, I'm on this trip. But I'm so interested to what it's like to read that script before it's visualized. What's the reaction when you read it?
It's what I said right away, Dada. It's Dada. It's Dadaist, and it will be bonkers, and the music will be strange and unexpected for what we see on the screen, and that's what we did. It was just it's somehow quite straightforward, because we know each other very well now, and I know that there's a world, a musical world that we have now kind of drawn. We know, you know, there's a large circle, and I know that in this bubble I can go grab this or that. But there's a bubble, and this bubble, I think we have it now. We know in which bubble we are. We are playing. So there's no false routes. You know, I don't take the wrong detour.
To
go to something too dark or too or too grand at the wrong moment, or too serious, or too whatever, you know.
And when it comes to, you know, because Wes sort of historically will have the odd needle drop in there as well, whether it's the Beach Boys in Fantastic Mr. Fox, or Grace Jones popping up in French Dispatch, you know, I'm assuming that you know in advance what's going to go, what he's considering or what he's got clearance for, where it's going to go. Because there's also a synergy either side of those as well, in terms of it can't, and it never does feel kind of that it's just been airdropped in. You know, it's, there's no clunkiness there. It's got a, like I say, there's a kind of, there's a morphing of either side of those in a way.
Yeah, there's a cohesion for sure. Yes, and because the his references are also very cinematic. He understands what a piece can bring in terms of energy, rhythm, melody to the picture that he's editing. Strange, I've seen that face before. See him hanging round my door like a hawk stealing for the prey, like the night. Yes, I try to balance that, but I can't. I have to be careful not to be too influenced by what is on all the needle drop that's coming through the film. Though I've been lucky since Mr. Fox, the amount of original score has increased a lot.
It's because you're doing a great job.
Maybe.
Want more of you, less of that. Jarvis Cocker, however, will always be there.
Yes.
J'avais dessiné sur le sable son doux visage. Cette plage, dans cet orage, elle a disparu. Et j'ai crié, crié à lui pour qu'elle revienne. Et j'ai pleuré, pleuré. Oh, j'avais trop de peine.
He's got some kind of contract. He's like a football player. He's signed like a 15-year deal with Wes that he's signed up for every movie.
Yeah, like Bill Murray. Yeah. He's got to be there.
I will never tire of watching Bill Murray on screen. He's just, it just makes me smile from the inside out watching
him. And in real life, he's the same. In real life, he's the same.
Do you go and watch filming? Do you go on set much?
No, unfortunately. I wish. Even this summer, I was hoping to go to Spain for the new film, but I've got too much on my plate to make a break and go to locations, sadly.
It's hard at the minute as
when
well.
Also because of the COVID, it was difficult.
Yeah.
Maybe when I'm very old, maybe I'll do that next year.
Come on. Right, I want to talk about some of the other Wes films just briefly, if that's all right, because I've got some other stuff. I want to talk about Little Women in a second as well, because I was lucky enough to speak to Greta, and I loved that film so much. But Fantastic Mr. Fox, you know, it was interesting that being your first film with him. And I don't know, were you nervous coming on board to work with Wes Anderson? I mean, you had so much experience at that point already, so I imagine you were, you know. But I think being nervous is a good thing in a way, because it kind of, you know, keeps you on your game, sort of thing. But also with it being an animation, you've got, you know, you do animation as well. I don't know if it's a different approach for you with working on a live action or animation, but what do you remember about that, the start of that relationship and actually working on the film and coming up with that beautiful kind of almost sort of folky banjo kind of backdrop to the score for Fantastic Mr. Fox?
Well, as you said, I'm nervous each time I start a film. You know, it's a new love story. It's like meeting a new person you're going to have an affair with. It, you don't know how things are going to go, because you have to be so near artistically, so close, so dedicated, so open to any suggestions, and at the same time be yourself. So it's a very difficult moment. Sometimes it works, sometimes it does not. It's like in love. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't happen. And whatever you thought at first, it might not happen. So on Mr. Fox, very quickly, I remember I was asked to write a animation score with an orchestra, and I didn't feel that it was right, because we have these beautiful little puppets, like this little one here.
Oh, have you got one there?
Oh,
my God.
Oh, this little dog here, you see what I mean?
They're just so beautiful.
They're beautiful. And so why the hell would I use a large orchestra for these little puppets? It makes no sense. It's too obvious or too big or too large. And I suggested to do an orchestra, but in like if it was gone into a washing machine, reduced with just one piece of instrument for all the sections. So one violin, one viola, one cello, one bass, one flute, recorders, small instruments, everything compacted, smaller, reduced. That's why it sounds so cute, because it's at the size of the actors, of the characters. Mm. Again, it's what I'm interested in. You know, I'm working with Stephen Frears on his new film, The Lost King, yeah. And Sally Hilkins is the lead of the film. I have to follow her moves. That's what I have to do. If I follow what's around her, it doesn't work. It's what is in her head that is important. It's the same with Mr. Fox. I go with the characters.
Yeah, I mean, Christofferson's theme, particularly for me, is one of my favourites from that. It's so beautiful.
Actually, on these themes, because they were rather short, and I'm going to work on them and extend them at some point soon.
Oh, that would be great. Oh yes, please. And also the kind of the whack bat majorette, the kind of there's so much scope of this sort of the tones and the like you say there are character themes, and they tell you so much about the characters that dialogue doesn't. And I love that. I think it's a great insight into the characters through the music. What about Grand Budapest Hotel? What were the conversations with regards to how that would be? Yeah, the instrumentation particularly on that.
Well, very early on, we discussed the instrumentation. I remember, I think I have an email somewhere of Wes saying, how would you like to, before even sending the script, how would you like writing a score with zithers and balalaikas? And I said, oh yeah, I can have fun with that. I've worked with, gypsy musicians before. I know that music very well of Middle Europe, and let's try and figure out how we can work without an orchestra, without strings, without the usual stuff, the usual symphonic band. So that's what we did. You know, we put cymbalums, balalaikas, mandolin, and it creates a very strange sound, very like we did on Isle of Dogs, you know, with having saxophones and male singers and taikos. It's such a weird combination. but it matches what we see, you know.
Yeah, and Moonrise Kingdom as well, that kind of, you know, the outdoor nature of that, I think, as well, is really well reflected in the musicality of the score. And it's got a, you know, because I think it's the most external of Wes's films in terms of landscape and nature, really, in a way. A lot of, it's so stylized and beautiful, but this felt like there was a real connection with nature with it in a way that I haven't really seen in his films, and which I thought was really beautifully reinforced with the score. I want to talk about two films before we run out of time, which is another two films. It was so hard looking down all your films and going, right, what am I going to talk to them about? Because there is a kind of like, okay. And you mentioned Sally Hawkins there. And I mean, she's special. I could watch anything she does, actually.
She's very, very, very good.
She's so versatile as well. You know, the mum in Paddington 2, or... she's in Craig Roberts' new film, The Phantom of the Open, which she's so great in. She can do anything. Shape of Water. What a film. What a score. And I know that you're working on Pinocchio with Guillermo del Toro as well. I wanted to find out about, the conversations about what that would be. Was that an easy film? I mean, I guess they're not easy, or maybe they are, to score.
Shape of Water was, it was rather smooth. Because the movie was so beautiful that, you know, when the movie is so touching, beautifully directed, great cast, marvelous actors, you know, there's not much left to wonder. You just jump into it and you do it. You dive and it's easy because, again, it's a lot of work. There's so much pleasure in each sequence that you try to put music on that. It's fabulous to work on such movies.
Was that your first time working with him, or had you worked with him previously?
No, we had worked on a couple of animation movies, actually. Rise of the Guardians. I did some music for another TV series, which was called, I don't know what, whatever. Mm. But it was our first, big one, yeah.
How would you describe, because the idea that you work with so many different directors, and he's an extraordinary visionary, and I think that it's so interesting watching what he's going to do next. He kind of, I like how he surprises you really with his choices. And with this one, it was it was just, yeah, it was out there, and I loved it. And I loved the kind of the emotional context of it through this character, you know, this beast, the creature. Actually, that's one of my, I love that piece of score from the film as well. It's really great. But what was he asking of you with the score? What was he looking for with Shape of Water for the purpose of the score? Because it's got a real, not a darkness to it, but it's got that, the kind of, you know, when you look through a dark green bottle and you can see the light through it.
Yeah, there's a dark melancholy about the film. His technique as a director is so perfect, you know, he's so strong technically that you never see the camera, everything is flawless. And you can feel when you watch Shape of Water that he's in love with his characters. He likes giving them lines. He likes filming them. He's really with them. And that brings the composer into the frame. It just draws me into the movie easily, because it's just strong and deep. And He's a very emotional man also. He, like, you know, he's a kind, big man. So you can feel it in his movies.
Wonderful storyteller. What can you tell us about Pinocchio? Very excited about that.
Oh, we've written the songs already that we've recorded with the cast. Some great actors, your fellow Scotsman, Ewan McGregor, for example.
He's got a good voice on him, hasn't he, Ewan?
Beautiful. He's a great singer.
I don't think he's got... I spoke to him last year, actually, and we were talking about Moulin Rouge, and he was quite, not dismissive of his kind of singing voice, but I was like... it was quite interesting. It's quite interesting to hear someone like that kind of not have the full kind of confidence in themselves about it. But I think he's great.
Maybe it's his shyness, but he sings beautifully. I mean, we recorded his song, which is quite difficult in a few, you know, in maybe an hour and a half or so. And it was fabulous. There's nothing I want to change. He was in a studio somewhere in Los Angeles, in his garage or whatever it was. And I was here in Paris and because of the COVID, so we have the songs with great performances by Christoph Waltz, by Ewan and all the casts. And I will start working on a film sometime soon. I mean, at the end of the year or beginning of next year.
How is it working on something that's got a kind of previous incarnation? You know, there's a wallpaper of what was there previously and taking that and making something new from it.
Well, luckily enough, the script that Guillermo wrote is his script. It's his story. So even though it's Pinocchio, it's through his eyes and his mind. So I don't have to deal with any previous story. And, you know, I haven't seen the original film of Pinocchio where the story was actually completely twisted by Disney, like he did in many of his movies. He twisted the original story to make it his own. Well, Guillermo did the same. He took Pinocchio and made it his own. So I can't remember even the original story, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm on with Guillermo's script, and that's what gives me the line to follow.
Before we do run out of time, I'd really love to talk about Little Women, because I had the pleasure of chatting to Greta about the film when it came out, and she couldn't talk highly enough of her experience of working with you on that film and what you did for the film and what it did for her, really. And I just was interested to find out from you what made you say yes to working on the project and what you remember from that experience.
The story, I mean, my older sisters used to read the book when I was a kid. I remember them reading that book in France, Les Filles du Docteur March, Les Quatre Filles du Docteur March. That was the French title. Fantastic cast. I love the story. Beautiful. And Greta had shown a lot of talent in a previous movie that I couldn't score. No, it was all, there was nothing to refuse. There's no way that I could refuse this film. And I was very happy because she's got so much enthusiasm and passion for what she does. Each time I would send her a piece, she said, oh, I love it, but is there another option? So I tried another option, and she would keep all the options. So I actually recorded twice the score, maybe, you know, in terms of minutage. You know, she used this there or that here, and she was really excited by the process, and I was too. So I'm looking forward to do another one with Greta.
Yes, Christmas morning is one of my favorite cues from that. I love the simplicity of the it reminds me of kind of tiptoeing downstairs to see if the presents are there, if anybody's awake yet. Must have been burning a few months ago, because I was lucky enough to do a kind of in conversation with Mr. George Clooney, and the way he talked about working with you on The Midnight Sky was amazing. He was just, it was so lovely, and it's so exciting. I love when actors make that, and Greta's the same, I guess, you know, in terms of actors making that journey behind the camera to create and make. And I think he's a fantastic filmmaker. I really do. I think he's got he's got great vision, and you can tell that he's been a sponge and he's just taken in all this stuff with all these different directors that he's worked with over the years, and using that and taking what bits he needs to allow him to tell the stories that he wants to tell. What was the experience like working on Midnight Sky? Was it a good experience for you working with George? And what's his kind of relationship with music as a director? How does he work with music? How's his kind of conversation and collaboration on that front?
Well, the best statement I can make is that George is a gentleman in all his behavior, and in work, in private, he's always a gentleman, and he loves music. He's passionate with music. You can feel when you play music to him that he's vibrating with the notes. Because he's been raised with his aunt, Rosemary Clooney, and around musicians. So as much as he doesn't play music, he can feel the music. And he can feel the music in his films. He can feel when the music is right. He's very open to what I do, to what I send. If he has corrections, he gives them, you know, notes. He gives them to me, and I change. Sometimes I'm too shy, and I try to be more braver, or maybe not braver, but, you know, wider. And sometimes I go back to my European style of writing, and he pushes me to be sometimes a bit larger. But he's always very supportive, very enthusiastic, very sweet. He's great. He's wonderful. And Midnight Sky was so much music to write. It was a huge, huge score to write.
Yeah.
Huge.
Thank you. It was great. It was so kind of interesting to hear about how he looks after his, you know, his team. It would be that on-screen team or behind the screens. You know, Felicity, I had the pleasure of chatting to, and, you know, she kind of discovered she was pregnant sort of as they were filming. And so he just wrote it into the story. It's kind of like, wow, it's like not everybody would be that kind of person, and it's the way it should be, but not everybody would be that person. And it's kind of, it's so refreshing to hear that that the world has, you know, some kind of really good people in it, really.
Yeah, the world of cinema. Well, he has a wonderful soul, and he shows it. He's not conservative of his gentleness. He shares his love, his passions, his melancholy sometimes, and he's happy to work with the people he's chosen to work with. He loves them, and so we love him in return. Mm. It's as simple as that.
We've run out of time, I'm afraid. I could talk to you for hours, because, well, not just because it's you, but because you've written so many brilliant scores. We've got another 3 films coming out in the next year, so hopefully we get a chance to chat again, sir. And I hope to get to see you in person as well, because it's always a pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Edith.
Au revoir, merci. Sure.
Nice fringe, by the way.
From Midnight Sky, that's A Child by Alexandra Desplat, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the French composer. My huge thanks to Alexandra for taking the time to talk to us. It is so brilliant to finally get the chance to talk to him for this podcast, and I hope that it is the first of many episodes that he will join us for. The French Dispatch is on general release now. Go and see it at the cinema. It is a real experience. It's just a lot of fun. Bonkers and brilliant, I think, is how I described it with Alexandra. And just a great, great entertaining film, as always, from Wes Anderson. The score, also, if you're a fan of score and like to either download them or buy them in vinyl, which I like to do, it's been released by Abco Records. That's A-B-K-C-O Records. You can link to a Spotify playlist for the show at edithbowman.com. So we put a playlist up for every episode. So all the music that we play, because we can only play tiny clips of it within the episode, but we put the playlist up with the tracks in the order they appear in the podcast, so you can hear them in their entirety. And edithbowman.com is also the place to catch up with every single episode of this podcast today, including my 2 chats with the aforementioned Greta Gerwig. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK, where we'll put up audio and video clips from conversations past, present and future, just to give you either a little reminder of some of the people that we've had on or to celebrate some of their brilliant work. Next up, very excited to have together Edgar Wright, who has obviously been on the show many times, and to welcome Christy Wilson-Cairns, who co-wrote Last Night in Soho with Edgar. She also co-wrote 1917 with Sam Mendes. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.